How you doing, everyone? Welcome to the very first Poor People's Campaign, a national call for more revival, young activists town hall, looking at the issues that's embedded in the Poor People's Campaign. And so we titled these series of town halls, it's the first one of a series of town halls, A Young and Unsettling Force. And so I have a wonderful panel that I want to introduce everyone to. But before we get to that, we are coming off of an amazing 40-day of direct action, and it was just mind-blowing, especially the convening in D.C., the weeks where we've seen individuals that's never organized in their life come on board. We've seen ministers, we've seen religious leaders, we've seen atheists, we've seen young people, we've seen high school students, we've seen college students, professionals, everyone come out and really become a part of this campaign. And so this is an extension of that movement as we look to highlight the young activists that's involved. And so with that being said, I want to shift the discussion on over to this amazing panel we have here. And they have been engaged in the work since day one, really before day one. And so their work have been really impressive. And so over these series of town halls, you get a chance to meet them, and you get a chance to know them intimately, and then others who have are deeply engaged in the movement. With that being said, I want to go through the line of those who are on. We have Anita, we have Ethan, we have Matt, we have Rebecca, we have Sunny, we have Tyler, we have William, and we have Zaynab, all on this call. And we're going to give them an opportunity to just introduce themselves to everyone that's on the Zoom and everyone that's on Facebook Live. We want to really open this up so you can get a chance to see and meet them and meet and learn about their experiences. And then we'll get into some discussions, and we're going to pull some discussions from everyone that's tuning in. And then we'll also have some questions that we already had on our minds to want to ask each other and gripe with. So we're going to try to be a little bit informal because we really want to really just get personal for a little bit. With that being said, I want to start with Anita. I have her sort of introduce herself, but there's three things we want to know about each of you as we go through the list. Number one, we just want you to introduce yourself. Number two, what was your role in the 40-day? And then number three is just talk about your experience, what stood out to you during the 40-day campaign. Okay, and so Anita, we'll start with you, and since your neighbor is Tyler, we'll move to him next.
All right, great, that sounds good. Thanks, Dr. Ruth. So my name is Anita Simha. You can call me Anita. My role with the Poor People's Campaign was focused on North Carolina, which is where I'm from. I graduated from UNC Chapel Hill in 2017. And while I was at school, and since I graduated from school, I've been pretty active in organizing spaces. But for the sake of the Poor People's Campaign, I was on the state coordinating committee. I was the co-chair of digital media along with Tyler, and I also led the Moral Fusion Nonviolent Direct Action trainings. Yes. Was there something else I was supposed to say as well? Okay. So sorry. What stood out to me over the course of the 40 days was really just the sheer weight of what coalition politics looks like. One of my favorite quotes comes from the former National NAACP President Ben Jealous, and he says, if you agree with everyone in your coalition, then your coalition is too small. And I think when we're talking about all these issues ranging from war to climate change to racism, we're gonna disagree, but that's not a reason not to collaborate. And I think for myself, as a woman of color who has a lot of class privilege, it was really, really cool to see everything I had to learn from all these people who were so similar to me yet so different from me over the course of these 40 days.
Yeah. So good evening, everyone. I'm Tyler Swanson. As Anita said, was the co-chair of the digital media and also co-chair of the Moral Fusion Direct Action trainings over the past 40 days. And really what stood out is really just seeing folks from across this state and across this nation speaking up and speaking out against the injustices that were going on. And, you know, seeing fast food workers stand with working class folks and the uninsured standing with folks who were insured was very powerful. I think, you know, a lot of the stories that really stick out, but I think one that's really sticking out to me now is Jade Jackson's story. Mm-hmm. Jade was the tri-chair for North Carolina, and Jade, I'm trying not to get a little emotional about this, but Jade was one who is dealing with a lot of health issues, who lost her health insurance, and week after week, Jade put her all in this campaign. And right now, she is recovering in the hospital, so I'm asking that you all keep her in your thoughts and prayers, but Jade's story is really one that stuck out, as well as Muffin's story, just seeing how these injustices are affecting everyone and how we have a moral obligation to speak up. And when we don't speak up, our silence is a form of betrayal. So I'm excited. I'm honored to be a part of this. And, you know, I think we are the ones that this nation is looking for. And we have an obligation to push this nation forward and to really continue this work, because although the 40 days are over with, this is just the beginning.
Thank you. So what we'll do, we'll move right on to Ethan. We'll give Ethan a chance to go ahead and answer the question. And thank you, Anita and Tyler, for that. So Ethan, same questions to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And then also, you know, what was your role in the campaign, or you know, what's your role in sort of this general larger movement? And then also, what's significant to you? And, you know, yeah.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm Ethan Blumenthal. Good evening, y'all. Thanks for joining us. I'm a recent graduate of the University of North Carolina School of Law. So I'm studying for the bar exam this summer, me with quite a few others. I'm actually also in the process of founding a nonprofit to do third-party rooftop solar leasing and community solar projects aimed at environmental justice communities. So that's what I will be doing with my time post-bar exam, hopefully, of course, staying involved with the PPC as well. My role really in the 40-day launch was more of a legal observer, trying to give my support everywhere I can. Since I'm in the process of applying for the bar, I unfortunately couldn't participate as much in direct action as much as I probably would have liked to, but we have to have our roles in our time, and you embrace that and you act how you can. This experience has been incredible for me, coming from a place of incredible privilege. Being able to hear from those impacted at every stage has been an incredibly deep educational opportunity for me, has grown me, and I think it has grown our state and hopefully our country some as well over these 40 days. And as we've said, it's just a launch. We will continue. For me, that's a huge part of it, is hearing from those, whether it's ecological devastation, whether it's the war economy, whether it's systemic racism, or anything else that the PPC stands for, actually hearing from those that have been impacted, particularly coming from such a place of privilege, that has been an important role for me and really impactful.
Thank you, Ethan. I'm a skip to Zainab. I'm actually give her the mic, and again the same three questions, and would love to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you, Terrence. So my name is Zainab Baloch. I'm here in Raleigh, North Carolina. What I do outside of the PPC is I used to work for the Division of Mental Health, and now I'm taking on a role with an app called Even, which is actually focused on getting people out of a paycheck to paycheck lifestyle. So due to the PPC, my interests kind of moved towards a lot more towards gearing towards helping people out of poverty. I joined the campaign in maybe December, and just kind of through a group of like-minded folks that are right here. And from there on, it just kind of took off. It has taught me so much more about myself, about my community, and about the country in general. And it has been an extremely powerful and life-changing movement. It's everything that I've literally been looking for and everything that I truly believe that this country needs right now. I think one of the most powerful things personally for me was learning that I am a Muslim, and that Muslim Americans are the poorest faith group in this country, and that 45% of them live in poverty. And for me, that just, and I joined the campaign before knowing that. And once I, and it took the campaign for me to learn that about my own community and to try to spread that outside of it. But on top of that, that is just one of the many statistics of everything that this country is doing to poor people in general. So poverty is really my main concern and linking factor here. The fact that there's a level of poverty we know, and there's a level that the system kind of keeps down poor people, but then there's the actual level, and it is at another disturbing and horrifying level that until you research and really learn about it, you don't realize what we're doing as a country to basically, it's very expensive to be poor. And we have to do something about it because our generation.
Sorry.
Could you not hear me?
Yeah.
Am I good? I just said my internet connection is stable. But I mean, I was just going to say, like, our generation is honestly poorer than baby boomers. I just read this article earlier today, and with the amount of student debt and everything we're dealing with, it's just going to keep getting worse. And so for me, it's just the intersectionality and the fact that, like, poverty is the root cause of so many issues of this country, and especially with everything that's going on in the border, the Supreme Court ban today. Like, at the end of the day, the root cause of all of that is poverty. It's people wanting a better life. It's people wanting to have a better life and to just be able to thrive and at least just live or be alive and be able to eat or have shelter in this country. And with a country that leads the world in income and in poverty, we should be able to do that. So that's kind of my investment and why I'm here, and I'm in it for the long haul. So I'm really hoping that more like-minded folks and many more people of my generation join on.
Thank you for that. And then everyone that's tuning in, if you're hearing these sort of introductions and you have questions, please submit your questions so that we can get it to the person that's on this panel. But just feel free, as you're hearing the introductions, if there's someone you would like to ask a question, et cetera, please send it on in and we can get it to the person that's on the panel. But I'm going to skip on over to Matt and give Matt the mic to answer the three questions. And again, the three questions that we are asking, just give us a little bit about yourself. What does the movement mean to you in terms of how you've been involved? And then the last part is, you know, what stands out to you? What stood out to you for the 40-day campaign? What's significant? But Matt, I'll give it to you.
Thank you, Dr. Ruth. Hey, everyone. My name is Matt Norkey. I'm in Chapel Hill. I'm in grad school. I'm studying mostly affordable housing, but I'm doing a lot with urban planning and law. And I've been involved in a lot of poverty studying and just working around poverty. And it's personal to me. I mean, I grew up with a single mother, and I've been very blessed with opportunity, but, you know, I've seen some struggles, and I mean, I've been privileged. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of people that have struggled far more than I have in ways that I can't comprehend, but I feel like it, you know, it's given me at least a little bit of perspective. And I think, similar to Zainab, I think there's a ton of Americans that are struggling and a ton of people that are struggling that we really don't talk about that much. And it's, we haven't done a good job in the last 30, 40 years as a country about talking about poverty and talking about the true struggles that people face on a day-to-day basis. And I think that the Poor People's Campaign is a really great way to begin talking about that, and a really great way to launch a new dialogue and discourse between people who live lives that, you know, a lot of us don't talk about. And I think that if we can get that into policy circles and truly, you know, sort of hammer that home, then we can start a new discourse and really begin to figure out what we can do as a country to be better and get forward. That's all I got.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. And then, you know, the questions are coming in, and we're getting individuals like Eric Johnson who's saying, you know, how can we help the panelists move forward from there in? And we'll get to that sort of, what's the next steps? You know, what's the journey? You know, what work are we moving into? So we'll get there. With that being said, I want to push sort of the mic over to Rebecca to give her a chance to answer the three questions, and then we'll move on to Sunny from there.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay. Hi, I'm Rebecca. I grew up in North Carolina, grew up in the movement. And for the past 2 years, I've had the ability the opportunity to work as a journalist, specifically researching inequalities in the South. And for me, it's been really great working with the cohort. And I think one of my roles is as a journalist to make sure I'm hearing the stories of impacted people that have really been informing my work and making sure I have my ear to the ground and understanding what's going on, especially as it relates to the most impacted among us. So that's been great. As far as what has really stood out to me during the campaign, like I said, just really hearing stories from those who are most affected, stories from people like Jade, who Tyler mentioned, and people like Callie Greer from Alabama, whose daughter died because she did not have health care. And I think that's really been showing me why we need to continue the fight, because it's so much bigger than just, you know, a few people. It affects all of us. So I've been really encouraged by seeing those most impacted standing up for themselves and speaking up for themselves.
Thank you, Rebecca. And so we're going to move it on over to Sunny. But before we get to you, Sunny, real quick, I just want to say something that stood out to me. I think it was week 4 in D.C. And the co-chairs were speaking from the mic. And the way the stage was set up, the sound was going out to everyone. Anybody that was around could hear the sound. And there was maybe 30 young girls from a preparatory school. They had to be in middle school. And they heard the message, and they ran over and started taking a bunch of selfies and just started listening to the sermon. And then after the sermon, they started coming and trying to figure out what is going on. What is the Poor People's Campaign? How do we get engaged in this work? And then Bishop gets up and he turns on Kirk Franklin. And then they start dancing to Kirk Franklin. And so you're seeing this whole engagement of these young preppy girls that remember this field trip. It looked like it was a field trip. They remember that field trip, and then they remember the message. And one of them, it had changed their life. And that's how this Poor People campaign has just sort of moved along. And so that moment stood out to me, watching sort of the movement draw in different groups of people from different backgrounds. And that sort of was a microcosm of what I've seen in the movement so far. But that being said, I want to shift the mic on over to Sunny and allow her to give her answers to the three questions. So who are you? You know, what was your role in the movement? And then the third is what's significant to you?
Thank you, Dr. Ruth. Yeah, I'm so happy to be on this conference call. I don't know what we call it now in the new days. But my name is Sunny. I am from Chapel Hill. I'm still a student at UNC Chapel Hill. I've lived here for most of my life. I was in summer school for the beginning of the Poor People's Campaign, so I wasn't doing as much support work until the last couple of weeks. And I think that mostly I've been a sort of a listener and a participant and less of an organizer, which has been an interesting role, I think, especially in terms of my connection with this movement, how it was really framed or inspired by the Moral Monday movement and the moral movement we've had here in North Carolina. And the difference that it's been and the similarities, I think, and I've played a much larger role in that one than I have in this beginning stage of the Poor People's Campaign. But in these past couple of weeks of plugging in, I've felt something new that I've never felt before. And I've tried to figure out how to talk about that in a concise way. But the things that I wrote down are three S's. a basis of solidarity that the fusion movement enables people to have that is intergenerational, it's multiracial, it's cross faiths, it's cross sexualities. And that is something that I think is when you buy into the Poor People's Campaign, you buy into solidarity and you are forced to reckon with what your identity brings to the table and what your identity might, how your identity might hurt someone else. I think specifically for me as a white person, I'm deeply interested in white anti-racism and how white people must take on the mantle of dismantling white supremacy. And I think that this fusion movement helps do that. And then the next two are song, which Dr. Ruth, you just talked about, just when the fact that everyone, when you step into under the Poor People's Campaign tent or in the march or anywhere, you are automatically lifted up in this community song that is just so, it's the most loving thing that you can feel. And then lastly, spirituality and how there is a deep spiritual and moral framework of this movement that I think brightens everyone's heart and makes us feel hopeful. So those have been the things that have been significant for me.
Thank you, Sunny. And you answered the one of the questions from Nadia that's tuned in that asked about, you know, what about the individuals who are not sort of engaged in a religious practice? And you sort of addressed that talking about how this is cross faith and non-faith. So, I mean, you really just highlighting what stood out to you. You answered one of the questions there. I'm going to turn the mic on over to Will, and after Will, we're going to move it to Kenneth. Will, in your highlights, can you answer a question that came from Stephanie that talked about sort of rural engagement and urban engagement? And I don't know if it's a part of your story or not, but if you can address that question as well, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, most definite. And thank you, everyone, for being on tonight. Hello, my name is William Barber III. I'm from Durham, North Carolina. I'm a recent graduate from UNC School of Law, so I've had the unique privilege to be both a student of law and a student of movement. That's something that I've come to cherish and hold very near and dear to my heart over the course of my lifetime, but also in these last few weeks, being able to work with so many amazing people. My role within the campaign, I was a volunteer working with the amazing panelists that you see here tonight, mobilizing young people, pulling together young people in North Carolina, making sure we were present and informed of the campaign. I also was a participant in the action for civil disobedience with my colleagues, Anita and Tyler here as well, with the support of everyone on this call tonight. So that was my role, being very intentionally engaged and plugged in with the campaign. And that was important for me, personal note, because that was one of the entire reasons I went to law school. When we talk about the agenda of the campaign, when we talk about the testimonies of impacted people, people on the ground being affected by detrimental public policy, for me as an aspiring attorney, I've always wanted to wrestle with the concept of social engineering. What does it mean to take this technical training, to take this degree, the access that comes with it, and then apply it to help create the country that and the world that we want to see come about and that we have a right and that we deserve to live in. So that's been very important for me. In terms of what stands out about the campaign, the Poor People's Campaign, there are a couple of things, right? One, as everyone has already articulated, is the breadth of this campaign, the deep fusion and coalition, sense of coalition that we see implemented. You know, this campaign is people of faith, people not of faith, it's people who are Black, white, what have you, you know, it's people who are LGBTQIA, people from all demographics, it's impacted people, it's people who want to stand in solidarity. But it's this sense of fusion politic. And this campaign, as the most recent iteration of fusion politic, I think is a model that our country needs in these very, very dark times. Another thing that stands out for me is the campaign's intentionality about avoiding being paternalistic. So when we talk about standing with impacted people, and giving voice with impacted people and not on the behalf of. That's something that I think we always have to center in terms of our progressive engagement. And something else that stands out is the intergenerational aspect of this campaign. You know, the leadership is broad, it's diverse. There is sometimes a good tension there. And I say a good tension because, you know, for me, good tension means that whatever you're doing is alive. If there's no attention, if there's no pain, then you're involved in something that's either stagnant or dying. This campaign has a lot of that good tension, has a lot of that good energy that I think reaches and pulls at the heartstrings of everyone, many people across this country. And finally, the agenda of the campaign, I think, is surgically precise. There is often a conflict between, on the progressive side, I believe, in building an agenda that's broad enough that people buy on, but also narrow enough that we can actually take actionable steps to move the ball. And the campaign, I think, does a good job of balancing that art. So that's where I'm coming from. I'm glad to be here with all of you all tuning in on Facebook Live, and definitely with my colleagues and the cohort here in North Carolina. And someone mentioned the piece about the rural versus the urban engagement. I think we're very cognizant, at least in North Carolina, that we have to get outside of our comfort zones, right? We have to get this message, not only in the venues where we know it will be heard, but often, you know, travel to some of those places that are more impacted and more removed from the degree of media attention or the degree of movement attention. So it's incumbent upon us as leaders and participants in this campaign to find those places. And if you have ideas about that, please put it in the comments. I know we'll talk a little bit later about a documentary, a visual project we're working on screening as an inlet to conversation. We would love to do some screenings in some places that you all have ideas about. So please put that in the comments and let us know how we can come out and help you all move forward together.
Thank you. And before we thank you, Will. And before we move on to Kenneth, I wanted to, there's a question that came up, I believe, from Carol, that really I wanted to push to somebody on the call, and I'm going to pick on Tyler. Tyler, if you could answer the question from Carol, that would be great.
Yes. So I understand. Yes. Voter registration is extremely important. It's one of
So that's where I'm coming from. I'm glad to be here with all of you all. Another thing that stands out for me is the campaign's intentionality about avoiding being paternalistic. So when we talk about standing with impacted people and giving voice with impacted people and not on the behalf of, that's something that I think we always have to center in terms of our progressive engagement. And something else that stands out is the intergenerational aspect of this campaign. You know, the leadership is broad, it's diverse. There is sometimes a good tension there. And I say a good tension because, you know, for me, good tension means that whatever you're doing is alive. If there's no attention, if there's no pain, then you're involved in something that's either stagnant or dying. This campaign has a lot of that good tension, has a lot of that good energy that I think reaches and pulls at the heartstrings of everyone, many people across this country. And finally, the agenda of the campaign, I think, is surgically precise. There is often a conflict between, on the progressive side, I believe, in building an agenda that's broad enough that people buy on, but also narrow enough that we can actually take actionable steps to move the ball. And the campaign, I think, does a good job of balancing that art. So that's where I'm coming from. I'm glad to be here with all of you all tuning in on Facebook Live, and definitely with my colleagues and the cohort here in North Carolina. And someone mentioned the piece about the rural versus the urban engagement. I think we're very cognizant, at least in North Carolina, that we have to get outside of our comfort zones, right? We have to get this message, not only in the venues where we know it will be heard, but often, you know, travel to some of those places that are more impacted and more removed from the degree of media attention or the degree of movement attention. So it's incumbent upon us as leaders and participants in this campaign to find those places. And if you have ideas about that, please put it in the comments. I know we'll talk a little bit later about a documentary, a visual project we're working on screening as an inlet to conversation. We would love to do some screenings in some places that you all have ideas about. So please put that in the comments and let us know how we can come out and help you all move forward together. Thank you.
Thank you. And before we thank you, Will. And before we move on to Kenneth, I wanted to, there's a question that came up, I believe from Carol, that really I wanted to push to somebody on the call, and I'm gonna pick on Tyler. Tyler, if you could answer the question from Carol, that would be great.
Yes. So I understand. Yes, voter registration is extremely important. It's one of the keys to this democracy. But we have to realize that registering is just the first step. And oftentimes we do so much to register folks, but we forget to educate and engage folks. So I think one thing that we have all committed to doing is not only registering folks, but telling them, look, we can't tell you how to vote, but we can look at the audit that has been created. And we can show you how some of these politicians have voted either for or against these issues that we're fighting for. But again, you know, we can't do this alone. It takes each and every one of us. And, you know, I'm so grateful for the Parkland students who are actually going around and engaging in a voter registration tour and the Women's March. Because again, we have to understand that we have got to take this resistance to the ballot box. And, you know, North Carolina has, again, is denying people the right to vote with this racist voter ID amendment that is on the ballot in North Carolina. So we've got our work cut out for it. We've got to educate our folks. And I think together, you know, we'll win this. So, McCary, we hope that you will be able to join us in whatever state you are to help us with engaging folks and getting folks to the polls.
Thank you, Tyler, for that. And then with that, we're gonna shift it to our last panelist, which is Kenneth. And with Kenneth, he's going to not only, you know, introduce us to himself, but he's also going to just talk about the work he's been doing and how everybody on this panel has sort of been working together to sort of highlight the young voice in this Poor People's Campaign, the National Call for More Revival. So with that, Kenneth, you have the floor.
I'm a co-founder of Free 7 Media, which is a documentary artist collective. And we're working on a project called Millennials of the Movement. This project, the origin story of it started with this group, this cohort that we've been following for a little over, actually a year now, which started with the Moral Movement in North Carolina. And it's brought us to where we're at today on this Zoom call. And you see how I just like skated right over myself really quickly. So the reason why I'm on this call is because I do think that it's important to share kind of what I've seen as a documentarian with this group. A little bit about me. I am from North Carolina. I'm a native North Carolinian from Raleigh, but I went to school at North Carolina Central University with Rebecca. You had an Eagle Fry. So Durham became my home while I was there. And that's how I really got connected to the really deep organizing community that is in Durham. And then retroactively that I found in Raleigh and that exists in North Carolina, that changed my whole perception about my home. You know, I think North Carolina is a very complex state and extreme maybe in some ways, but that extremity of people organizing around love and justice and trying to manifest that is real, and I've seen it. And I want to share it. And so I'm filming it. So right now I'm in grad school working on a master's in cinema at Howard University. And while I'm doing that, I'm developing a docuseries around the experience of this cohort as they are actually trying to change the future that they see. The future, I mean, when we look at, you know, the absurdity of racism, that we're facing in the 21st century when we look at the absurdity of poverty because of greed, when we are looking at the most powerful military that history has seen, the future looks very unclear. When we look at like the actual environment that we're going to need to have a future, and the people who are studying it are telling us that it may not exist for future generations, it's concerning and it is not very optimistic. And then when you add on top of all of those issues, the fact that there are people in legislatures across the country and even in the Supreme Court that are rigging the electoral system to prevent anyone from changing this, it makes it almost seem hopeless. So to be around young people who are creating hope, out of really literally creating hope, for me, it seems like there's nothing else that I as a documentarian should be doing other than trying to share that with as many people as possible so that they can see what is possible.
Thank you, Kenneth. I appreciate it. And I mean, the questions are rolling in, and there's one that came in that's been sort of asked several times during the sort of discussions we had on Facebook Live during the Poor People's Campaign. This new series of town hall discussions around sort of the youth voice in the Poor People's Campaign, where we're receiving the same question, and that is, how can the more seasoned individuals that's in the movement help the younger voices in the movement, and what relationship is a healthy relationship between the two? And so I want to punt it over to Anita, and then once she's done chewing on it, anybody else that wants to jump in, feel free to jump in and just give you insight. This is a question that has been asked several times, so I think it's something that we can sit on just for a little bit. All right, Anita, you're ready.
Thank you. So I think with my experience in the North Carolina Poor People's Campaign, the sheer fact is that we pull in people from our own networks, and due to the way that society has really intentionally been structured, we end up pulling in people who look a lot like ourselves. So if our movement, you know, starts out with a core group of leadership that's heavily white, it's going to continue to be white. If we start with a core group of folks who are more seasoned, it's going to continue to look really seasoned. So in terms of combating that, I think the best way is to hold space for those young people, but then once those young people come on, not to limit them to that space you held for them, if that makes sense. I think one of the most dangerous forms of privilege that exists is kind of something that Will was talking about earlier, which is that tone of that patronizing tone. That's like, you know, I have studied racism so long and so hard that I actually think I know better about what people of color should do than they themselves do. Or I have studied, you know, millennials for so long that I actually know what's better for millennials than millennials. That type of tone tends to be kind of pervasive in a lot of these movements. And I think really being conscious of combating that is the best way to ensure that young folks can get involved and stay involved and feel, you know, engaged in this movement.
That's good. That's good. Anybody else?
Yeah, to hop onto that, I mean, I think that the nature, you know, figuring out this art of intergenerational engagement is like crucial to all movements that are going to survive. And I think part of that is to, one, change, you know, our root, where we kind of come from when we talk about this subject, is instead of seeing that, you know, I go back to this concept of, right? Because I think that's often what people categorize the dynamic between elders and veterans in the movement and young leaders who are, you know, energized and have been activated. I think if we start looking at that tension as not a detriment to our movement, but as indicative that we have something that is growing, that is vibrant, that is alive, You know, I think that's one aspect, is that we have to recategorize what pension means for us. You know, we're never going to be in a situation where we're going to agree with everyone in our circle 100% of the time. And we don't want to. You know, I don't agree with myself 100% of the time. I have conflict over what I want to eat for lunch sometimes. So if we, you know, if the expectation is that is for tranquility instead of good tension, you know, I think we're doomed before we start. I also think that it means we have to be willing to sit in community and conversation with one another. I mean, I cannot tell you how appreciative I am of growing up alongside my father, you know, and his leadership, when he would drag me to places and spaces I did not want to go, did not understand at an early age, that I now see coming full circle. You know, the amount of wisdom that has been, I've been blessed to be bestowed upon me, that I can appreciate. And so I cherish very intentionally moments where I can sit at the feet of elders and both teach and learn from them. And, you know, you're never going to agree with anyone all of the time, but you have to figure out how do you take what you can use and then leave what you can't, because you can always learn something from everyone. So that's my approach to the concept of the intergenerational.
Thank you for that, Will. I just wanted to let y'all know, Zainab is really crushing these questions that y'all sending over. So if you're typing in your questions, she's answering them. So please continue. But I have a question that I wanted to really throw out before we get back to the question that's coming from everybody that's tuned in. And this is for anybody. I'm just going to throw this on the table. How have the campaign, these 40 days, how has it changed the way you've seen youth engagement in movements or in this space? And so I'm just throwing that out, anybody who wants to chew on that a little bit, but just, you know, not so much get engaged. As people can see, y'all, you're in there. You've been there since day one. So the question of how do we get young people involved is the wrong question. So the question I'm asking is, the movement is moving and you've been a part of it. How has it just changed the way you see your engagement, the youth voice, the space? But I really want to see its impact on sort of your perspective.
I'll step in real fast. My internet is being weird, so I'm just hoping that everyone can hear me. I think the biggest thing about this movement is that I've been part of a lot of different things that people want youth engagement stuff in, but they're not always willing to hear us or really do or take any of our really advice or our suggestions or be open to what we want to do. And I think this is one of the first movements that any ideas or any out of the box creativity ideas we have, the PPC takes it and they let us run with it and they let us do what we need to do because we know how to best activate our generation and maybe other generations. And this movement specifically, I feel very heard and I feel like they're very willing to listen. And I don't feel like I'm just a millennial voice part of the movement. I'm actually part of the movement. I'm not like separated from the movement. And it's not like a different movement. We're all part of the same thing. And I've never been involved in something that is so open and so willing and so just eager to have us part of it. And not only that, but to be able to take lead and to be able to actually lead the entire movement if we want to. Like, it's not just come here and listen to what we're saying. It's, hey, come take charge of it and do what you can do.
Thank you, Zena. Anybody else?
Well, I mean, I don't think I completely agree with everything Zainab said. And I think if you look back on history, youth have played that pivotal role in every movement. And I think we're just continuing where our elders and where the SNCC and CORE and where those great folks left off, we picked up and continued. But I think, you know, this movement, I'm going to just stop before I get tangled up there. But I agree. I think, you know, we have that space where we can actually come in, take leadership and challenge our folks and challenge them out of love, not out of hate or anything. But so that way, that's how you have that creative tension. And every movement has got to have creative tension in order for it to sustain, in order for us to continue to grow as a unit.
I'm going to throw this to either Matt, Rebecca, or Sonny. Somebody's asking about sort of the young voter. You know, so what has this movement sort of done to the young voter, or what should we say to the young voter who's looking at November or looking at 2020? You know, what will this campaign sort of give them in terms of being prepared for?
I'll take this one. So in 2014, actually, Sunny and I and William and Tyler, we were part of a campaign, voter engagement campaign in North Carolina called Moral Freedom Summer, inspired by Freedom Summer of 1964. And our campaign, it was issue-based. You know, it wasn't about political party. It was about what candidates, or, you know, who is fighting to expand Medicaid? Who is fighting to ensure that children have access to help, to education, and different issues, the issues that impact us. So I think that this campaign has showed us that it's not about, you know, Republican or Democrat, it's about the issues. And I think that's what's really going to draw people out to the polls.
That's strong. That's strong. Anybody else want to add anything to that?
Hi. Oh, is Matt going? You go ahead.
Sorry, Sonny, I didn't mean to hop in. I was just going to say, I think that, you know, this is a small thing, but the Poor People's Campaign, I think, really drives home policy in terms of how important it is to vote on policy and really consider what politicians are going to do about policy. And it doesn't really matter what their party is. You really have to look at their stance on issues. And I think filtering down from that, it's a lot of people don't pay attention to state or local elections, but I think that the Poor People's Campaign, as we've all kind of talked about, is a start of policy discourse. And I think that if we can look at every election, you know, midterms, the presidential elections, that, you know, all of them, and really look at every person, every candidate and their policy positions, and, you know, begin to really examine that. And I think that the Poor People's Campaign kind of serves as a reminder that it's important to look at every one of them. And it doesn't matter if it's local, state, or national, they all matter. I mean, in North Carolina, our state elections are incredibly important. They shape most of what happens in our lives, and, you know, from a day-to-day basis. So I just think that is something to really truly engage with and think about, is that, you know, your vote matters in every election, not just the, you know, the big ones. But that's all.
No, you're fine. I just wanted to build off of something that I think it was Tyler said at the beginning of the call about the next steps in terms of voter registration. I think inspiring the young voter is an even like bigger plight because we feel, I think we feel like that deep connection or deep disconnection between like, what do we see from voting? Like what are our impacts? And I think that this campaign has such a like accessible structural analysis. And I know that's a lot of big words, but like it's something that is clearly long-term, so much so that the voting doesn't feel like our only option. And I think, and that is so clear the whole time. And so when we talk about all of these policies and how they impact or they create these institutions that are oppressing people or disenfranchising them, people are thinking of voting as one of their responsibilities, but only one of them. And I think that that engages the young voter. I know it engages me in a way that is much more, that speaks directly to what I want to see for like my kids in 10 years, instead of like seeing that 45 gets elected in this last election. I don't know, I hope that.
Thank you, Sonny.
I just wanna piggyback on that if I can, Dr. Ruth, is that, yeah, I mean, conceptually, I think the campaign has broadened the conversation and broadened our concept of what it means in terms of victory. You know, just like we understand that we have a broad four-issue agenda, what it means to win, or what progress looks like for us, has been broadened. You know, we're really talking about power building for indigenous communities on the local level. We're really talking about the uplifting of self-determination for communities on the local level. And we're understanding that, yes, you know, voting is, as Sunny said, a major component of that. But we're also talking about challenging the rampant moral depravity that allows for detrimental public policy to go and to create rampant poverty without being addressed. We're talking about that. We're talking about access to public education and access to affordable housing that lifts people up out of a position to the point where they can engage fully in their communities, not just for one electoral cycle, but in a way that they can fully understand what it means to be free in this country. Like, we're really talking about building of power for impacted people in this nation. And only then, you know, I'm so thankful for the campaign for broadening that. And only then can we really say that we've moved the needle.
That's good. That's good. Tyler, you have anything? Are you good? So I want to shift a little bit to another question. This question really is looking at sort of the country's response to the Poor People's Campaign or your state or local community. So if you had direct action in your state, in your city, or if you just reflected on how the country responded to the 40 days, I would love to hear sort of your observations. What have you seen? What has changed? Or did you see a perspective shift in your community, in your space? I know a lot of local media were surprised to see the deliberate and consistent direct action and to see the diversity in that space. So from your perspective, from your local space, the state, how have the country responded? How have the state responded? And how have your community responded to the 40 days of action?
I can try this one out. I think North Carolina is an interesting state because for at least 3 consecutive years, we had the moral movement. So in our state legislature was already used to people engaging in civil disobedience, people refusing to be silent. What I found interesting this time around was that it seemed like the General Assembly authorities were more forceful about keeping us silent, or attempting to, at least. And I think that's because we were, really touching upon systemic issues that if they are addressed, we could bring about systemic change. So of course they were not able to silence us, but I did see the attempt to do so.
Thank you, Rebecca. Anybody else?
But no, I think I agree with Rebecca. Particularly as we went on through this 40-day launch, particularly with certain people within the General Assembly, you could see it definitely got under their skin a little bit as we continued to push truth and speak truth to power and directly to power, getting in on their meetings, getting to their offices, and making sure that we had said what we needed to say, at least in North Carolina, to more or less to their faces sometimes. I think really the power is going to be moving forward. I think a lot of the building was in the community that did show up, showed up to the General Assembly and showed up. And I think where we're really going to see that as we progress and push towards November, I think this group through this 40-day launch puts us in a position to push forward and in a good position. So I'm very optimistic in that. I can't speak too much to other states or the more national state of affairs. As far as it's North Carolina, again, is different in that the biggest city is Charlotte. But Charlotte is isolated from this in that it's not the capital. And so most of the PPC's work has been in Raleigh. And so where I'm from Charlotte, and so I'm hopeful that this message can push the 150, 175 miles down the road, down to Charlotte and really engage, Murphy to Manuel in North Carolina, that's the tips, really get it all the way across and all the way across this country. But I think it is important that we started in the capital and started strong in the capitals so that we can build.
I think jumping off of what Ethan said, the power in the Poor People's Campaign is that we are bringing real life stories to light that people have for far too long ignored, because there's no way to directly face what's going on in this country and continue to do nothing about it. And so I think really what we need to continue to do going forward is just continuing to uplift the voices of people who are dealing with these issues day by day, and letting those stories speak for themselves. Because once you hear something like, for example, what folks are dealing with in Eastern North Carolina with coal ash in the water, once you hear what those people are dealing with, there's no way to hear those stories and not be moved to act.
North Carolina, and then travel to a few states involved in the campaign. And there's two things that stand out is that one, the agenda and the campaign resonates wherever we've been. And the stories are often the same. They're, you know, extremely similar when we talk about the rampant poverty and the things that people are facing. That second aspect that I think is evident is that individuals who are relying on the status quo of things, the distribution of power as it is, are scared. I mean, we were in Kentucky. Shout out to my friends, Kentuckians of the Commonwealth, Sharon and Sarah. We were in Kentucky where there's a deep progressive vein, and the governor actually sectioned off the General Assembly, the People's House, and was so afraid of his constituents, his citizens raising their voices, that they unconstitutionally barred the citizens of that state from entering the building and being able to speak their truth. Because they realized once that truth was heard, they could not stand against it. So we're winning, y'all. And the resistance is alive and strong. And I'm so glad to be a part of it.
Thank you for that, Will. I'm sorry, Ken, have you gone?
Yeah, I'll be quick because it's the most obvious thing to me. The fact that it's called the Poor People's Campaign, when through all the previous elections, it's like the word poverty has been banned. And so to me, this putting this into the public discourse opens up in the future the issues that we can talk about, and that we know when we talk about poor people and when we talk about poverty, we immediately can say, we can begin to say that greed is not good. And I think that that's something that it's just really good that we say that now, so that in the future we can begin talking about a whole host of other things and really change.
Thank you. And for those of you who are typing in your questions into the Zoom chat box, we're working very diligently to make sure you get an answer. Also, what we're doing as well is if you can provide your email in the question itself, we'll make sure that we respond to your question promptly. But we are about out of time. And so with that being said, I just want to talk about some next steps. Number one, we're going to be in your face again, so you don't have to worry about us being in your face. So we're going to be in your face. But number two, follow the Poor People's Campaign social media. That's where you're going to see any news, any events that's occurring. We've shared on the Zoom and it's shared on the Facebook Live the link to the next town hall. They're going to be a combination of in-person and online town halls. And so we want everyone to plug in. This is not just a North Carolina thing. Okay, that was one of the questions. There are young activists from all over. We just had Erica Orr from Illinois. We have Terrence Mayo from the East, Northeast. There are young activists over in California that we've been engaged with. Really, the country has voices. So we're going to try to highlight those voices and bring them into these town halls so that you can not just hear sort of young people engaged in North Carolina, but there is a sort of a wave. There's an unsettling force across this country that's plugging into this movement. So the next thing is to look forward to more live conversations like this. One of the last things I want to mention is we have screenings of documentaries. The video you seen at the beginning and the video we're about to show is a part of a documentary that's going to come out that we would love to host in your area. And so please plug in, let us know if you're interested. There was one question about can we come to the rural areas and show communities how to get young people involved? So we're open, we're willing, we're ready. But again, thank you everyone that's on Facebook Live. Thank you everyone that's on Zoom. Thank you for plugging in. We are glad that you are here. We're glad that you listen to us this hour. And with that being said, I want to leave you with this promo video And thank you to all the panelists. You did amazing. You are amazing. Thank you. And with that being said, check out this video. It's again highlighting the young activists in the movement.
Millennial, I'm an activist, I'm Muslim, and I'm really just working towards like systematic change. I feel like we've come to a time in this country where I just can't. I've always worked on like the community organizations, very much on the ground in service organizations and various levels. But I've realized that there are bigger issues, that these issues have to tackle them systematic way, and you need to actively go out and do something about injustices, which means that you do things like Poor People's Campaign. You go and advocate for people who are dealing with these issues and who, once we put into places to where we can uplift these voices and really, you know, change the quality of life for everyone, we not only improve others' quality of life, we improve ours too. You're only helping yourself.